Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
One day I got up and looked in the mirror and I did not like what I saw. I mean, I was just a walking coffin.
Ken Shamrock!
Ankle lock and Shamrock. Shamrock does it.
Hit Shamrock!
If there's one person you don't want to mess with, it's Ken Shamrock.
Here we go.
Shamrock.
Ken Shamrock, how are you doing?
I'm well, thank you.
Did you check out the Conor McGregor fight, didn't you? I've seen you tweeting about it. What did you make of it?
Yeah, you know, I mean, obviously, you don't like to see that kind of finish. I think a lot of people that don't like Conor kind of celebrated that. I was a little bit disappointed. Obviously, I think karma is something that you can definitely talk about, you know, but I think as a fan, when we watch athletes prepare for something, there's a lot of emotion, a lot of hard training, a lot of pain through training. That you go through to prepare for something like this, everybody's different, different characters, different personalities. Everybody responds differently. And I think in this case, you know, Conor put a lot into this thing. Conor has a personality that's volatile. He's outspoken. He has no filter. He says what comes to his mind. Even though when he says things, it's still pretty well thought out on what he's saying and why he's saying it. But to me, it's a little bit too much, in my opinion. But in the world that we live in and with the things that we're allowed to have happen in our society, Conor McGregor is just a product of that. I mean, we're allowing people to walk up and knock girls down because something happened 1,000 years ago, or, you know, people get beat up because they believe one thing or another, riots and burning cars. And we're saying that, defund the police and don't go doing all this. But then you get Conor McGregor that stands up and starts doing similar things to what the world is doing. And we all come apart. Well, you can't do that. That's out of bounds. I think our society is breeding these kind of individuals, and people better wake up because this is the product of the environment we're creating, not just for athletes, but for young children growing up. This is a product that we're going to see more of because now everything's accepted. So when you look at it from that perspective, in a worldly basis, not just an individual, I think you'll see, but that's basically what we're basically saying is okay now. There's no boundaries anymore. You look at Jake Paul, the Paul brothers. They've made millions and millions of dollars of insulting people and saying crude things to people. I got no problem with it. I never had a problem with people building and selling a fight. I've had some boundaries and stuff that I've kind of kept, but if I was in today's world and fighting under these conditions, I'm not sure that I wouldn't step over the line a few times because why not? It seems to get everybody talking.
for as long as it draws people in and makes money, you're going to see people doing that sort of thing. I think that with Conor McGregor, a lot of people have connected him with a career very much like your own to transcend from MMA into professional wrestling. Do you see Conor McGregor doing that?
You know, the one thing about pro wrestling that people look at from 3,000, 30,000 feet up, it's not what you think it is. It's not something that anybody can just walk in and do. There's a lot to it. So yes, I think Conor McGregor's got a tremendous character and personality. He'd be a great heel or babyface in today's world. Like, you could be both. But I think he would be tremendous. The question is, can he do it?
Let's wind back at the clock just a little bit, because I'm intrigued to know, because am I right in thinking that you turned down like the NFL to do more football stuff to pursue wrestling? If so, what was the deciding factor that made you go this way rather than this way?
Well, through high school, I had a scholarship, a couple scholarships to go play ball, even in wrestling. And I broke my neck in wrestling during the season. So I had a long road to come back. Because I was told that, you know, my contact days were over. Like, I was never going to play contact sports again. And I, like I said, that was, you know, that's kind of what my DNA was. That's how I was successful at everything I was doing. It's because sports was always the gift if I did well. And so when that was going to be taken away, it was a long road to get back to it. You know, a few years after that, I went and played junior college, which nobody would touch me. So I went and played junior college ball. Was a team captain, led the team in tackles. I mean, I had a great, great couple years, but I couldn't get into a university, you know, broken neck and all that. So it was just real tough for me to have anybody take a chance on me. I could walk on into a junior college and going into these bigger universities, it was a little bit more difficult to with a history of a broken neck. So it was a little bit tough for that. So I came to a crossroads where I was doing wrestling. I was had an opportunity to go over to Japan. And at the same time, I could either go try out for the Chargers, because I got a letter to go try out. And this is a few years after high school. I broke my neck, went to junior college, and then I started wrestling for a little bit. And then I was thinking about, you know, wanting to play pro ball, and I finally got a letter. But that was right around the time that I was starting to make my move into the Japanese circuit. And so I decided at that time that I would stick with the wrestling and also the fighting, because I believe it was UWF at the time. Where I was over in Japan, and I was just starting over there, and I loved it. And it was around the same time I got the letter to try out for the team. Didn't mean I was going to make the team, but at least I had the shot to go try out. And I thought I was good enough, fast enough, big enough to be able to play ball. But I felt like the direction that I started to go after breaking my neck, which was an individual sport, that it was all relying on me, and I didn't have to rely on anything else for me to be able to do what I wanted to do. I step in there, no one's going to tell me, well, you're second string or third string. If I get into that ring, I make the decision whether I'm first string or second string. So I went that direction instead of playing pro ball. Like I said, I had the option, but I went with the individual sport.
But to go from, like, as you the neck break you suffered, as you were told by people, that's the end. You're done with contact sports. But you know, undeniable Ken Shamrock. You're like, no, I'm going to see where this goes. Was there, like, moments of, for yourself, like, trepidation when you were getting back out there and maybe you got hit in a certain way, you felt the neck twinge? Was there little moments of doubt, or was it just 100% this is where we're going, this is what we're doing?
Yeah, and I think that's the strength of my abilities is that when I set my mind to do something, I don't think of anything else. And I mean, I was playing college ball 2 years after I broke my neck. I was playing a defensive end, and I never one time during that whole process ever thought about my neck. Never, ever thought about it. And then I went through years of fighting with people not even knowing I broke my neck. I would do interviews and they would ask me this and ask me that and never mention it because I forgot about it. I literally forgot I broke my neck. Because for me, it's like, I focus so much on what I have to do rather than the things that have already happened. I focus on the things that I can make happen.
Vince Torelli. The sensational youngster Vince Torelli, along with his manager and confidant Paul Jones, taking on Trent Knight in this opening match. And I tell you what, he has been impressive, Big John.
Really impressive. You notice from the last few weeks we saw him, he's gotten rid of those decorations. I've heard Paul Jones tell him, hey, man, you're the wrestler out there. You don't need decorations. Just show your stuff. That's all the fans want to see.
Where did Vince Torelli come from?
Yeah, that was when I was in South Atlantic Pro Wrestling, for whatever reason in wrestling, that you didn't want to use your real name. You had to have a character name. And so I'm not sure who it was, whether it was Nelson or I'm not sure who it was, but somebody came up with the name. They wanted me to, they said I looked Italian, and I'm Irish, but they said I looked Italian. They wanted to come up with an Italian name, and so somebody came up with the name Vince Torelli, and the actual Mr. Wrestling himself actually gave me a plaque that awarded me the name Mr. Wrestling, Vince Torelli. So that was pretty cool too, because with my style, I was always, even before submissions, I was more of a technical wrestler. And so I got awarded that. But the Vince Torelli name came from somebody, one of the promoters, whether it was Nelson or is it George Scott or George Paul or I can't remember, but somebody, one of the promoters came up with it because they thought I looked Italian. They wanted to go with an Italian name. And so they came up with the thing, Vince Torelli, and I liked it. I thought, oh yeah, it's a pretty cool name. And so that's kind of where the Vince Torelli character came from, was from another promoter.
Did you find yourself, because at that time, kind of characters in wrestling was how it was done. It was larger than life comic book people. Did you find yourself leaning into sort of like an Italian style persona, or was it just a name?
Yeah, I don't think I had to do anything because my character, my personality, all kind of fit into the Italian thing. Because even Irish, you know, when you think about Irish, the characters are pretty similar. Tough guys, fighters, hot-headed. So it just kind of fit. I mean, I have an accent anyways, a Southern accent. Cause I was born in Georgia. And so I've never lost the accent, especially as I start to really get into, heat of things, it really starts to come out. And so it just kind of fit really. And that's why they came up with the name, because I was around them for a while and they just felt like, wow, this dude, he'd be really good as an Italian. So, that's where they came up with, and my character and my style, everything just fit right in with it.
Can One Punch Shamrock against Hoist Gracie, whose legend continues to grow in the martial arts world? The last 18 months, he has become the most well-known martial artist on the planet. Fourth degree black belt in Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. And here comes Ken Shamrock into the octagon.
You weren't entirely sold on the UFC thing at first, were you?
No. No, I was fighting over Japan. I was a champion. And this thing came up and it was like, you know, because I was schooled in pro wrestling. I came from pro wrestling. And so when I heard this no holds barred, anything goes, it's like, okay, that's pro wrestling, right? Because there's no such thing as that being real. So when that came up, it was like, no. Nah. And so then I made a call and tried to hunt it down because he kept telling me, no, this is the real thing. And I was like, all right, let me check it out. And so I made some calls and came to find out it was real. But I didn't know it until like I don't know, the first fight of the UFC, which Gerard Gordeaux kicking a sumo in the face. That's when I think the world woke up and said, this is like real. If it was me or Royce Gracie in that first fight, people would have walked out of the arena. There's no way they would have believed what we were doing was real. But a kick to the face was pretty obvious that this was real.
His tooth come flying out as well. Was it in that one where his tooth came flying out?
Yeah, he kicked him in the face. And I swear, it felt like the whole place went silent. Like, did that just happen? Like, it was hard to digest this. Like, with the world that we lived in back then, it was hard to digest that we literally just saw a guy on pay-per-view TV walk up and kick a guy, a defenseless guy, on his hands and knees in the face, and it was okay. So it was a shocker, but I think that it couldn't have been any more better to have those two guys in that particular fight to be able to really help people understand what it is they were going to be seeing.
What I think has been amazing about the UFC is on many occasions, they seem to have done wrestling storylines better than actual wrestling in a very real fighting environment. Like the stuff with you and Gracie is legendary. And did you realize as you guys were getting into it, as you know, as press conferences were getting more heated, as the match was almost canceled on one occasion, did you realize that you were getting the world talking the way that you were?
I don't think so. I think kind of in our heads, we're more focused on what we're doing. You know, my character, luckily, because I know that Campbell McLaren and Bob Myowitz and many other people had mentioned that without Ken Shamrock, we may not be where we're at today with the UFC because of the way that I would build the fights, the way that I would go after my opponent, and the more, just like with the Conor McGregor thing, a little bit less than that, but kind of the same thing, whereas I'm not a quiet guy and you're going to watch my fight because I'm going to make enough noise for everybody to look and say what's going on there. And that was just the way I was. And especially in those beginning days where a lot of guys were, you know, trying to even figure out what was going on, I was screaming and yelling and telling people, I'm the best in the world. I'm going to beat the snot out of you. And I'm not going to feel bad about it. And I think that caught a lot of people's eyes, and it helped me really elevate to the level that I was because of the character that I brought into that fight with.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, allow me to introduce the special guest referee for the following match from the Ultimate Fighting World, Ken Shamrock.
Ken Shamrock obviously in great condition, and this man can handle himself, no doubt about that. He has proven to be the very best at one time or another, and maybe still is, in the Ultimate Fighting World. Can he handle the Hitman Bret Hart and Stone Cold Steve Austin?
Well, it's going to be a huge challenge, there's no doubt about that. Ken Shamrock, as ABC Television said, the most dangerous man in the world.
After you'd established yourself in UFC, when did conversations start with the WWF?
Yeah, I think it was more when we got into a situation where Bob Myowitz was struggling being able to financially keep things floating because, you know, they were constantly in and out of court. Every place we went, it was a battle to put the show on. There was all these people gathering around, politicians trying to get their name in the paper. And so they would come up with these signs just saying no violence, you're killers, no human cockfighting. And they would start making a political issue out of it so that politicians can start getting their names in there. And so anytime that we went to a state, you knew there was going to be a politician waiting to be able to protest this event because it was getting big news. And so Bob was spending a lot of money on trying to defend every single place he went to. And so it was hard to pay the fighters the money they needed to keep fighting because he's kept constantly fighting this battle of being able to put a show on, even though the state said they could put it on, the commission approved it. But then you had these politicians and these people come in and start saying, we don't want that fighting here. And it would cause a problem and they would take it to court. And so That's what we were doing in every single state we fought in. There was a legal battle before every single event. And so therefore, Bob wasn't able to pay what he needed to pay to be able to help the guys keep, especially me, be able to keep my family taken care of. And so once it got to that point, I had a discussion and Bob Myers and myself came to an agreement that I just had to move on because I couldn't support my family. And the fighters, I had a fighter's house, I had gyms, had all this stuff going on, and I couldn't support them. And so I sacrificed my opportunity to be able to stay in there and fight so that I could support my family and support the fighters that were still in the lion's den and were still fighting over in Japan and here in the U.S. I took the back seat so that they continue to follow their careers.
They appreciated that because obviously you ended up going back there. But did you have any regrets at that point? Of stepping away? Did you?
Of course I did. You know, I mean, think about it. You know, I was the best in the world, you know, and you know, I knew I had a few more good years of fighting for the title and then being able to step away and just focus on training people. I thought I had a really good thing going. But because of the situation, I had to step away from it. I had to allow my other guys that were still training and still fighting to have a place to train and also to be able to keep them fighting in these different organizations that the relationships that I had developed with them and keep them going and keep the Lion's Den going. And so therefore I had to sacrifice my time of fighting. And yeah, of course, you know, I would have loved to stay and fight, and I would have loved to been able to continue fighting and not take the time off. But that just wasn't there because there's no way financially that I was able to keep up this empire that I had built. So I needed to go and figure out a different thing and then come back. Sorry. Okay. And then come back when I had things started to move back in the right direction.
We know the reasons now why you ended up making the move, but what was the sort of mood amongst your peers about you moving from Ultimate Fighting to the WWF?
Yeah, nobody knew the reasons why. Mm. You know, they just knew that I was now going from this you know, beast of a fighting organization into pro wrestling. And, you know, you got some people that were just diehard MMA people or just, and even my fighters, it kind of split my gym down the middle because they basically looked at it and said that I was walking away from fighting, going into something that was fake. And I was doing it for the money. And I looked at them. I didn't say anything to them, but I'm thinking in my head, yeah, of course I'm doing it for the money. I mean, don't we all do it for the money? But that's not the main reason why I walked away. I did it because I couldn't keep putting the gyms and the food and the housing. I had 3-4 houses, fighter's house, my house. I had my in-laws' house and my dad's home, which was a group home for kids. So these 4 homes I was taking care of. And not only just the food too, like I had to, you know, take care of the food and all that. And so being able to have the money to be able to take care of all these things, I needed a certain amount of money. So I wasn't able to do that. So I had to step away and do something else. And so they didn't know this. Like, they didn't have the mindset to understand that I was leaving because I couldn't continue to keep you guys, the ones that were, half of them that were getting mad at me, didn't understand if I didn't go, they would be gone. I couldn't keep paying for the fighter's house or the food and getting them fights. I couldn't do it anymore. But I didn't need people to know my financial situation. It wasn't none of their responsibility. What I would have hoped is that they would have understood that whatever I was doing was because it was for the best for the Lion's Den. It was the best for my family. I wouldn't make any decisions that wasn't going to be good for everyone. And unfortunately, some of them didn't see it that way. They couldn't understand it. And it was none of their business. I wasn't going to tell them either because that was my own personal issues. So when I signed with WWF, yeah, of course, even the fans and some of the media, they ate me up. I mean, they threw me under the bus. They wanted to stomp on me. And but none of them had the understanding of why I was doing it. It was because I wanted to keep furthering my legacy within MMA. being able to keep my fighters in the lion's den going, and being able to support my family. And then for me to be able to come back when the time is right, when it starts making money again, I can come back to it. That was, like I said, that was something that I had to deal with. It was hard because I got a lot of bad things said to me, within the fighting world and also in the fan base. But that's kind of what goes with the territory. I sucked it up and I went and did what I thought was right. And luckily for me, I became a huge star, because now we see that it's a normal thing now, that it's almost a given that when you're done with MMA, you go to pro wrestling. But I had to break those barriers. I had to get beat up and kicked around and break down that barrier in order for it to be okay, like it is now.
Since this has all come out, have you had people who maybe spoke about you behind your back or even to your face, apologize for judging you? Have you had any conversations like that?
No. I know I got hammered by the media, but none of them ever said anything. They just moved on. I still talk to some of them even today. And they don't think I know, but I do, you know, I mean, I read it. So, but you know, it is what it is. You know, the one thing I always say in today's world, it seems like somebody calls you stupid and they can sue you. It's like, or that you got a right to hurt them for whatever reason. I just think that, you know, I don't worry about stuff like that. To me, it's like I said earlier, I worry about the things that I can do now, not the things that happened in the past, and I move on. And that's just the way I do it. And so whatever happened then, it happened. But again, I know people and people get emotional, just like we're seeing with Conor McGregor and that fight with things people are saying. But a year or 2 years down the road, we'll all forget about it. It'll all be over, because it's just things. People do things emotionally. They act emotionally. Conor McGregor broke his fibia, whatever it was, and they put a microphone in his face right after, on the ground, broken, and Poirier's wife's flipping him off, and Poirier's saying things to him, you know, going back and forth. And so some people don't have a filter. If you do that, you're going to get raw footage. It's going to be blunt and real. So, you know, it is what it is. And I think that's where we're at in the world today, where I don't worry about stuff like that. I don't get emotional or over attached to something. I think I look at things and as it being real, and I look at it as, how can I fix it, or how can I move forward, or how can I make money with it, or how can I develop it? I don't worry about any of that other stuff.
Well, this was the whole thing with you coming into WWF, and it's talking about how you make money with it. Well, here's a guy from the Ultimate Fighting world, former Super Fight champion, the world's most dangerous man. And you kind of have, on the one side, those UFC fans who are saying, oh, you're going to wrestling, you're going to the fake stuff. And then you get into the wrestling and they're going, ah, we've got a real fighter. Let's see what he's made of. So like on both sides, you're getting flack. I mean, what was the reception like within the locker room when a real fighter arrived? I know you've talked in the past about a square up in a harmless way from Bradshaw in the locker room who wanted to try Shamrock. But did you get a lot of stuff like that?
I'm actually not. I think it was pretty, I was pretty well receptive. It was really weird because, like, when you walk into a locker room, everybody is kind of, they're checking you out. There's a distrust, but they're friendly, right? They're still friendly. But you can tell there's a little bit of uncertainty, like, how am I going to be? And so I know Brett told me, he goes, hey, make sure you get in there in the locker room, you shake people's hands, be very accessible, because of who you are. You've got to be very accessible. They got to be able to know you and know that you're not here as a fighter, you're here as a student, you're here to learn. These guys are the pros, you're coming into a new sport, and you have to learn all this stuff again. And so I mean, it was a lot of things I learned from Brad that helped break down that uncertainty. And so it helped out a lot to know how to deal with them. And I did. And even like when I you know, submitted Big Show and submitted Bradshaw and Blackman and all those guys that had tested me in the ring and in a good way, not defensively like that. It was a friendly thing. But they all wanted to kind of know what I could do. And so I was able to do that and not hurt them, right? Just to let them know what it really feels like. And there was a big appreciation that started to circulate around the locker room of people knowing what I was capable of doing and actually not doing it. And so it wasn't long before I had a lot of trust with everybody there. These guys are not wimps. These wrestlers, and it's funny because when people look at wrestling, and especially the ones that are hardcore, you know, fighters or combat sports enthusiasts, they look at wrestling as these guys that are like these toy soldiers, like they're just not real. And boy, I tell you what, man, you got a big mistake there, because there's a lot of these dudes that are just tough individuals. And they don't just come around and do pro wrestling because they can't do anything else. They do pro wrestling because they've done everything they can do in the athletic world, whether it be karate, whether it be football, whether it be basketball, whether it be wrestling, or whether it just be a street tough kid. There's a lot of people in wrestling that if you were to put them in MMA and give them some training, they would do well.
Is there anybody that you can see in the current crop of wrestlers that you think would do well in that climate?
You know, you can't say that because it's just like with pro wrestling, where you talk about pro wrestling and you say, well, this guy, man, he'll be good at it. Just because you have a character and that you can really, sell fights is complete. Look at me. I mean, I could sell a fight, but, you know, put me on a microphone where I'm trying to be a character. It's not the same thing, right? It's just not the same thing. But so, yeah, you got to see them in there first to know whether or not they're capable of doing it, because it's just so many variables to being good at pro wrestling.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This could be all. Shamrock will break that ankle. Turning it. That's all. That's all. Shamrock has won the title. Right, why has he put this ankle lock back on the wall? My Avia's bleeding. His ankle could be broken. Shamrock, he won't let go. He snapped.
Hell on the UFC. This is the World Wrestling Federation. If you want a title shot against Stone Cold Steve Austin, bring your little blue trunks out here, and I'll beat your. If you want your title shot, come on down.
I mean, you look at the lineup of guys that I wrestled. It was the biggest event for me getting in the ring with those guys. I mean, it was amazing to be standing across the ring from stars like that. So it's hard to separate the excitement of being able to work with those individuals, be able to put matches on with those individuals. Bret Hart was a tremendous worker. I learned a lot from him. Probably one of the most significant trainers that influenced me. I thought that I could emulate quite a bit of what he was doing because of my style and how I wrestled. I felt like I could really bring in that submission style of fighting along with the attitude and the toughness. Like I said, there's a Big Boss Man, there's Bret Hart, The Rock, it was exciting to get in and stand across the ring of a lot of those huge stars. I like Bret Hart. I like the Big Van Vader. I thought that match really helped me solidify the toughness and the attitude. And then I would say The Rock, because we were able to put together some pretty good programs. So, yeah, I would say Boss Man, Bret Hart, and The Rock for sure. Yeah.
Those are your favorite opponents. And also like to work with as well. I mean, like to break down your time with Bret Hart, we might jump around the timeline a little bit here. Like one of the most iconic moments from WrestleMania is that Austin Hart match. And there's moments in that people remember, like the double turn between the two, the blood pouring down Austin's face. But in amongst all of that, literally in the center of history, there you are. Taking Bret Hart down to the ground, like in one of your first appearances, that must have felt like a special night.
Yeah, you know, in the moment, you don't really think about it, right? You're so tied up into what you're doing. And for me, I lost myself in that match because it felt so real that it didn't feel like a pro wrestling match to me. It just felt like I was involved in this. Two guys that were beating the hell out of one another, and I was there to make sure they didn't kill each other. So it was definitely exciting. But like I said, when those moments happen, it's not like you sit there and go, "Oh, this is a great moment." You feel it. Like you feel like it's a great moment. You feel like this was a great match. You feel like you were a part of something special, but you just don't know how special until time tells you.
Yeah, it's only when you look back on it. And you mentioned the match with Vader there as well. That was sort of your introduction to the WWF. And you know, historically, you've been one of those guys. And through your time working in UFC, you don't pull your punches. You really go in there and you make people work. And you're in there with Vader, who's got a similar pattern to him. How what was the process of putting that match together with Vader? Do you remember some of the conversations you guys had?
Yeah, we just said, "Hey, don't hit me in the chin." It wasn't much to it. He said, "Hey, let's just go out there and let's fight. Let's put on a match that you're comfortable with." He said, "Don't worry about it. Let's go in there and make sure." And one thing that I felt comfortable was that because he had fought already, he had been involved with being able to fight in my style. And he just basically said, "Man, let's go in and let's spar. Let's go in and make sure your punches connect. Make sure that when you walk out of that ring, that people don't say what you did wasn't real." So I know that going in with Vader, I was very comfortable of being able to throw my punches, throw my kicks, my suplexes, my submission holds, and that he would roll with it. And he did. And I remember even in a couple of those things where he literally hit me, where I caught him with the knee and broke his nose because he was going down and I was throwing up. But that was my fault because I didn't tell him that I was coming with the knee. And so he kind of dipped down into it. And then soon after that, he throws a punch and he hits me and I go right down to the ground, and everybody thought Vader knocked me out. And because going back to the locker room, they're going, "Hey, you okay? You okay?" And I was like, "What are you talking about?" Like, I had no idea how stiff we were working. It just didn't feel that way to me. It just felt normal, right? Like, this is just normal training session. And, but it on film, it looked vicious. And so I was very happy when people were coming to me, and Bret Hart came to me and said, "Dude, that was really good. You guys, that was a great match." All I did was fight. Like all we did was go in and spar with each other. Right. And neither one of us were trying to hurt each other, but we were definitely wanting to make sure that it looked as real as it could. And I know that we were not pulling back on our punches. We weren't pulling back on our throws and submissions, that we were being very aggressive with one another, because we knew we both could take it. And so that was exciting for me to go in, and especially being my first one, I didn't have to work with somebody, you know, like a Shawn Michaels or a Hunter Hearst, where I probably never would have wrestled again if I would have had a match like that with them on my first show. Nobody would have worked with me. Nobody would have came near me. But Vader really worked with me, and there was no bad talk or thoughts after that match. He told people I was great. It was perfect. But Bret did say, you know, now that you have a little bit of a foundation of what it's supposed to be like, he said, think about easing up about 10 times that. Ease it down.
it's a good gauge, to be honest. It's sort of like the Vader gauge. Like, you can go all the way with Vader, and then you just, you know, sometimes easier to pull back than give more. So start with Vader, work backwards from there.
That was perfect. And that's exactly what it was. It was just being able to give me my ground where I needed to be, without putting all that pressure on me to have to go out and perform in a match that I wasn't used to performing. And so I owe Vader a lot, because he really did help me get over that first match. And he never complained one time.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, I'd like to introduce to you a very special guest. He is the world's most dangerous man, Ken Shamrock.
So here I am.
Yeah.
Waiting to put Moose in his grave.
Yeah.
I came here for one reason. And one reason only. And that is to beat him into a living death so he'll beg me to put an end to him.
Talked about some of your favorite opponents for the WWF, and your time came to an end there, and you worked with the National Wrestling Alliance, and then you disappeared, and in 2019 you came back, and honestly, Ken, when pictures appeared of you back, it looked like you left wrestling and just carried on fighting like anybody for years, just kept on fighting, because you came back like ready to go again, like in the best condition you've ever been in. What was it that made you disappear, and what was it that made you come back?
Yeah, when I actually, you know, separated for a while, it was like 5 years or something like that. I remember walking away from training and everything because I was so tired, and my body was so beat up. I remember I was even having some atrophy in my arms. I was getting shrinkage in one of my arms because of some neck stuff that I had going on from breaking my neck. It broke it twice. And I started to have some spurs grow into it, and I was getting atrophied, and knees and shoulders. It just really felt bad. My whole body ached, and I just stopped doing everything. It was like a year, a little over a year. I just stopped. And one day I got up and looked in the mirror, and I did not like what I saw. I mean, I was just a walking coffin, and it was like, this is not me. I'm not living life. And I told myself, I need to figure out how to get out of this. Like, I can't do this anymore. And I started back in training, and I felt so sore. And I remember mentioning it, and somebody had come to me and I autograph signing that I was doing and told me about this thing called BioAccelerator. And I was like, what? And he said, nah, it's like the Fountain of Youth. And the minute I heard that, I go, shut up. It's like, I don't believe in that magic, man. It's all hard work, man. It's all hard work and discipline. And he goes, I'm telling you, man. And then he showed me a video of Matt Hughes. I mean, this dude went in a wheelchair and he came out, and a few weeks later, I mean, the dude is walking, he's lifting. I'm like, that's Matt Hughes. I mean, this dude is no BS. And he's telling people it's the Fountain of Youth. I was like, okay, I'm in. I mean, I know this dude and he's nothing fake about it. And I was like, okay, I'll give it a shot. I don't know if it's going to work the same for me, but let's find out. So I went down and did it. 6 weeks later, man, I'm like, I'm already feeling good. And this thing is like 5 to 6 years. You're going to be getting more and more, and it keeps growing. And I was like, 6 weeks out, I'm like, all the inflammation, the soreness I had was gone. I still had joints and injury spots, but within, I would say a year and a half, gone. I was like a new man. And I started to, I go, I'm going to start wrestling again. And then that's when I made that post. I'm coming back to wrestling, you know? And I wasn't coming back just because like, I wanted to come back and make money. I came back because I wanted to compete and I felt so good. And so I went and had a match in Australia at Battle Championship Wrestling. And I did a dive over the top. I just did it. And a hurricanrana, suicide dive and a showstopper, just all these things. And I was like, I haven't done any of this stuff in 7, 8, 9 years. And I just felt good. And then, of course, I wrestled a lot longer, became a tag team champion up there. My body was feeling great. Then I got back into Impact and did something in Impact and did my first match. And I remembered doing a suicide dive over the top rope, a showstopper. Even a hurricanrana. I mean, I did all these things there too on TV. And I'm like 55 years old, man. I was like, I feel great compared to what I was. I felt like I was a dead man laying on the couch. And I just felt so good, man. It just felt so different. And it really was. It was a lot of it. And it was a lot of the stuff too, but a lot of it had to do with the BioAccelerator, being able to take the inflammation and the soreness out of my body. It was rejuvenating and healing. And I tell you what, man, if I ever could say something that was the Fountain of Youth, this is as close to it as you're going to get. It was phenomenal. BioAccelerator. And I went to Medellin, Colombia, to do it. And because here in the States, they don't give you as much because they have these guidelines and stuff that they can't go over because of the restrictions. But over there, they give you as much as you need for it to help you. And I thought that was the biggest difference, was what there was no restrictions and that I could get what I needed because I'm an athlete. I got a lot more going on than most people. So it was able to really give me enough to be able to really help me recover. And I haven't stopped since, man. I feel great. Feel strong. Back to training. I don't have to worry about going in and feeling, you know, like I'm a walking coffin because I don't feel like training. I don't feel good. Now I have a life, and it's been 6 years now, over 6 years, and I'm still going.
It's as much as it's a physical game. The BioAccelerator seems to have done the wonders for you because you've been rolling back the years. But there's a mental game there as well, isn't there? And I imagine that as well as getting your body right, you've probably had to do a bit to click mentally back into that place as well.
Well, mentally, I don't care what you take. I don't care what you think, diet, this, that. You have to train, and you have to mentally be strong enough, especially when you get to my age, that you're committed to what you're going to be doing, which is training, working out, running, stretching, staying fit, eating healthy. These are all commitments, and mentally you have to be strong enough to be able to make sure that you hold to your commitments. Because I don't care what you take or what you do, if you don't put anything in mentally, mentally and physically work at it, it ain't going to do anything for you.
You need to be, yeah, it needs to be the training. The training is what does it. The world's been on fire in the last year, but you've sort of consistently been a part of Impact Wrestling. Not seen anything of you since January. So where are you at right now in terms of the wrestling? Where are you at?
Yeah, I think it was a mutual agreement. It was difficult for me to wrestle with no fans. I've always felt the impact, no pun intended, from the fans. Being able to know when to do something, know when to get excited, screaming and becoming crazy and doing all those things all elevate from the fans. And not having the fans there was a real strain on me. It just didn't feel right. I know a lot of people, doesn't matter, they just continue. But to me, I thought that was a big missing piece, even though I did fine. I mean, I was working, it was great matches and good thing. But I think that the extra piece for me to really be able to have gone over the top and be that Ken Shamrock of old was the fans were missing. And it just felt like I couldn't have that extra oomph that I needed being able to feed off of those fans. But I felt like, you know, they also felt like it, maybe I should step back and take some time, even though everything was going fine. It was nothing wrong. I was more focused on trying to get my promotion going, which is the Valor Bare Knuckle organization. We're looking to really see how we can really make that something special. I think Bare Knuckle is the future. I think that the excitement and the safety of that, safety so much to safety, but as far as gloves and no gloves, I don't think there's a difference. I really don't. I think if anything, it leads more towards being a lot safer in the long run, not having gloves on. But that's a whole nother discussion. But I'm really focused on putting this promotion together. It's something that I have always loved, which is the purity of fighting, which was bare knuckle. You don't get anything to help you. The way that we set up our pit, the bout circle, is that we believe people should come in and fight. Just like back in the old John L. Sullivan days, they didn't need ropes. They got in a melee hay or around a circle with a bunch of people. Two people go in to fight, they're there to fight. And you can't use ropes or fences to hold you up or to bounce off of. I mean, to me, that's you're using something to help you. And so we're taking those out. We don't want anything that's going to help somebody have an advantage. We want it to be pure fighting ability. And so we're pushing that. And I'm excited. I think, it's going to bring back what people think as being old, but it's going to be new.
When you talk about, so because I wanted to get onto Valor, because like you are looking at like almost like an actual pit for the fight, like in like metaphorically and almost literally, because it's going to look very different. Because I think a few people may have compared it, at least I've spoken to something similar that Josh Barnett does with Bloodsport, but I think this is going to be very, very different, isn't it?
Well, yeah, because you're going to look at this and it's bare knuckle and it's closed fist. And it's straight stand up. So there's nowhere to go. You can't lay on the ropes. You can't hide anywhere. It's called the bout circle, and it's a fighting surface. You're going to have to fight. There's no clinching. I mean, you can't clinch because you're not wearing gloves. So there's no reason for you to clinch. So if you get in close, if you grab, you're going to get penalized. So your fists have to stay closed, and every place in there, you have to fight. There is nowhere to go that you cannot fight. If you don't, you're going to end up losing. And so for me, that's what's exciting about this, is that when people come to an event, they want to watch a fight, not something that turns into a clinch match or a guy laying on the ropes. So we're cutting that out. And these guys that we bring in to fight are going to fight. You're going to see a fight.
With Valor, is there anybody on the roster that you know of that we need to be looking out for who you think may steal the show?
Yeah, we don't have anything going on yet. Right now we do have the card, we do. But right now it's a little premature to announce anything with that. So we're going to wait until we do our big announcement.
Okay, well, we won't push any further on that. But where can people go if they want to find out more about Valor? They want to stay up to date with everything you guys are doing.
Yeah, valorbk.com.
Obviously, you say, you know, you've mutually decided to step away from Impact. The fans thing, I totally get. It's a strange environment to be in. But if the fans come back, Ken, will you come back? Are you going to come back and do another one?
You know, I'm always an entertainer. You know, love the fans. I've always loved it. I've always loved being in the ring and competing, and especially in front of the fans. It's not the same, or at least for me, it's not the same unless they're in the audience.
Absolutely. Okay, so Ken, this has been a wonderful chat. Thank you so much for taking time to speak with us at Cultaholic. Best links, where can people find you online? Let's send them your way. Where can they go?
Yeah, you can find me at kenshamrock.com. I have all my social media platforms on there. So come check us out. And also don't forget valorbk.com if you want to stay tuned on our up-and-coming fights. We have a couple of them lined out, which we'll be announcing soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.